I want to say that I've enjoyed this experience with you, and I'm grateful to Eva Salters and to Eric Bowersfeld and Randy Tom and Susan Sanders. And I'm about to be grateful to two others, Dennis Leonard and Bob Shoemaker. I haven't known quite what to present to you, but gradually what's going to be given has shaped itself. I'm at a point of change. One thinks, I suppose, that he's always at a point of change. And maybe it isn't true. And I've written down on these 10 sheets of paper the things that I think are happening as I start whatever I do next. Some of these sheets, there are 10, I've jotted down ideas that I've had for a long time. And others are things that, most of them are things that have happened to me recently. I'm not going to read them in the order that I wrote them. But nor am I going to read them. I'm going to use them as the basis for a kind of improvisation. Ordinarily, when I give a talk, I prepare it. Only once before have I improvised it, as I will today. I did that once on a roof in Ann Arbor for the Once group. And while I was improvising, David Tudor was also improvising. Today, Dennis Leonard and Bob Shoemaker will collaborate to record what I improvise for the first sheet. And then I'll wait a little bit, and I'm going to use chance operations visibly for you so as to find out which of the next 10 sheets I shall read or shall improvise on. And while I'm improvising on the second one, the first one will be played so that you'll get to hear it for the second time. And that will continue until we get to the end. So, I have these printouts of a program called IC, which is I Ching, for the numbers from 2 to 10. And I have 10 sheets here, so my question is, I'll tell you that later probably. My question is, which of these 10 sheets I shall begin with?
You're listening to All Things Cage at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 Radio for Open Ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, Director of the John Cage Trust, and this evening we'll break from our usual conversational format once again for me to begin what will be a two-part program on the subject of John Cage and improvisation. To do this, I'll be drawing upon Cage's first and only performance of a little-known work from 1989 entitled How to Get Started, conceived almost as an afterthought, a performance that would substitute for another that had been previously planned. In his introduction, Cage speaks about the difficulty of initiating the creative process and about improvisation, a subject about which he'd long been deeply ambivalent. He proposes a collaborative framework in which sound engineers capture and subsequently layer his extemporized monologue, which consisted of 10 brief commentaries on topics then of interest. This was also an experiment having to do with thinking in public before a live audience. Some 20 years later, in 2010, Slott Foundation, and the John Cage Trust partnered to create a unique and permanent interactive installation of How to Get Started at Slott in Philadelphia, enabling the public to participate in its further life. This was a collaborative endeavor involving three curators, me on behalf of the John Cage Trust, Aaron Levy, director of Slott Foundation, and our mutual colleague, Arthur Sabatini, at the time professor of performance studies at Arizona State University West. The project's website, howtogetstarted.org, has become an evolving digital repository and archive for the recordings affected by invited artists and others. I encourage everyone to have a listen to realizations that have taken place both at Slott in a specially designed recording room, as well as in such public venues over the years as Bryn Mawr College, Bard College, the Institute for the Humanities at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and the Museum of Contemporary Art, Detroit. Performers have included the late Pauline Oliveros, Elizabeth Streb, John Kelly, Brian DeWan, Ralph Lemon, Ann Waldman, Peter Greenaway, Edgar Corrett, and the late Chris Mann, among many others. The text that follows, along with the recording that we'll listen to in its entirety next week of Cage's one and only performance, were produced for a CD and booklet produced by the Slott Foundation in Philadelphia. Alas, the CD has long been out of print, but one can sometimes find it on the secondary market. We'll listen at the close of this evening's program to one of the works referenced in my introductory remarks, Cage's Improvisation 4, performed by Jesse Stiles, which was heard with Merce Cunningham's Fielding Sixes. In August of 1989, Charles Amerkanian and John Lifton joined forces to present the second Composer-to-Composer Festival in Telluride, Colorado, an invitational conference created under the auspices of the Telluride Institute, which served to bring together composers from around the world to discuss and present their work. This took place in both closed day-long sessions, August 14th through 17th at the Telluride Elementary School, and public panels and concerts, August 18th to 20th at the Sheridan Opera House. The participants included Joan LaBarbera, Tom Johnson, Trimpin, Anthony Davis, Jinhee Kim, Walter Zimmerman, Conlon Nancaro, Morton Subotnick, Julio Estrada, Laurie Spiegel, Ricardo Dalfara, Tanya Leon, Anaya Lockwood, and our own John Cage. While there are many things to say about the composer-to-composer festivals as they evolved over their brief four-year history, this particular year gave rise to an unusual confrontation between two of its invited composers, Anthony Davis and John Cage, centering on the subject of improvisation. After Davis reflected at some length in his presentation that his concerns had long had to do with the ways by which improvisation could be effectively incorporated into otherwise fully notated works, Cage responded by essentially dismissing the usefulness of that pursuit. Now, those cognizant of Cage's life and work will be nodding in agreement, since along with his lack of feeling for harmony, improvisation is ostensibly the aspect of contemporary music practice least in accord with his thinking. But how true is this assessment on either front? It is generally known that upon hearing the premiere performance of James Tenney's Critical Band in 1988, the previous December at the New Music America Festival in Miami, Florida, Cage did an abrupt about-face on the topic. "If this is harmony," he said to virtually anyone who would listen, "I'm all for it." But what about improvisation? From Cage's vantage point, and as generally practiced, there were all manner of things to overcome: control, emotion, style, personality, hierarchy, intuition, celebrity, habit, intention. On the surface, then, Cage's dismissal of Davis's preoccupation seems entirely sensible. So it may come as something of a surprise to learn that Cage's published writings and interviews throughout over two decades before suggest a somewhat contrary idea, that while there may be sharp distinctions to be drawn between their motivations, the two composers had not, in a sense, been so dissimilarly inclined. Some of Cage's earliest compositional efforts involved improvisation, evidenced by his experiments in the 1930s in relation to texts. Experimental writings from Transition magazine, Gertrude Stein, Aeschylus. But these were quickly abandoned. Issues specific to the usefulness of improvisation as a performance practice seem to have resurfaced for him most forcibly in the mid-1960s, when he began to speak publicly on the subject within discussions of something inarguably closer to his heart, that is, how, as a composer, he might effectively turn intention toward non-intention. In 1966, in a conversation with Stanley Kaufman, Cage first expressed his dissatisfaction with improvisation, principally with what he perceived to be its lack of discipline. Yet what's also clear here is that his internal dialogue on the subject remained decidedly exploratory. As he put it at the time, chance operations are a discipline, and improvisation is rarely a discipline. Though at the present time, it's one of my concerns, how to make improvisation a discipline. But then I mean doing something beyond the control of the ego. Improvisation is generally playing what you know and what you like and what you feel. But those feelings and likes are what Zen would like us to become free of. In the same interview, Cage stated that in his estimation, most performances of his theater piece from 1960 to date had been poor simply because people didn't understand the need for discipline. Some 14 years later, in a 1980 conversation with Cole Gagne and Tracy Karras, Cage asserted that he was finding ways to free the act of improvisation from taste and memory and likes and dislikes. Interestingly, this at a time when he was simultaneously engaged with not only various forms of indeterminacy, but with extremely determinate music. For example, his Freeman Etudes for violin started in 1977 and completed in 1990, which were written down in as exact a notation as he could muster. It is thus all the more interesting to note Cage stating here, and in no uncertain terms, that his developing interest in improvisation was probably freer than anything he'd ever done before, including indeterminate music. In 1982, in a conversation with Tom Darter, Cage further posited that the difference is that improvisation frequently depends not on the work you have to do, that is, the composition you're playing, but depends more on your taste and memory and your likes and dislikes. It doesn't lead you into a new experience, but into something with which you're already familiar, whereas if you have work to do that is suggested but not determined by a notation, if it's indeterminate, this simply means that you are to supply the determination of certain things that the composer has not determined. In a particularly on-point interview with Stuart Smith a year later, Cage reflected on his compositional path over the years, stating that since 1968, he had found two distinct ways of turning intention toward non-intention. Through the music circus, simultaneity of unrelated intentions, and through what he called music of contingency, that is, improvisation using instruments in which there is a discontinuity between cause and effect. Cage's music circus is exemplified by his eponymous 1967 composition, of course, wherein through the chance-determined presentation of multiple performing entities, one is treated to a mass superimposition of many different kinds of music. We were able to listen to the very first staging of Cage's Music Circus here on All Things Cage several weeks ago. But it's also exemplified by such earlier works as his Cartridge Music from 1960, wherein musicians perform programs on phonograph pickups or cartridges that they've created following instructions provided in the score. As Cage elaborated on this work in his conversation with Gagné and Carras, one person's actions unintentionally alter another person's actions, because the actions involve changing the tone controls and the amplitude controls. So you may find yourself playing something and getting no sound whatsoever. Cage's Music of Contingency is exemplified by such works as his Child of Tree, Improvisation 1 from 1975, and Branches from 1976, in which plant materials serve as instruments amplified via contact microphones and simple sound systems. As he explained in a 1983 interview with Laura Fletcher and Thomas Moore, "There I give directions for improvisation because the improvisation can't be based on taste and memory since one doesn't know the instruments. Further, if you become very familiar with a piece of cactus, it very shortly disintegrates, and you have to replace it with another one that you don't know. So the whole thing remains fascinating and free from your memory as a matter of course." His Inlets, Improvisation 2 from 1977, scored for players of water-filled conch shells and the sound of burning pine cones, is another case in point, since in any performance of this work, the performer has no control whatsoever over the conch shell when it's filled with water. You tip it and you get a gurgle sometimes, not always. So the rhythm belongs to the instruments and not to you. Other works to note are his Sound Anonymously Received from 1969, wherein a solo performer is instructed to produce sounds on an unfamiliar sound source, one anonymously received, his Improvisation 3 from 1980 and Improvisation 4 from 1982, both employing stereo cassette recordings, which are played back with minimal constraints by multiple performers, and his Improvisation A and B from 1986, an indeterminate composition for a mixed ensemble of clarinets, trombones, percussionists, voice, and cello. This last is a particularly good example of Cage's Music of Contingency, since while the actions of each individual performer are surely required for any performance, the context in which they perform as an ensemble effectively thwarts any possibility of intentional cause and effect. In a 1984 conversation with Bill Shoemaker, Cage stated unequivocally that what he'd like to do is to find an improvisation that is not descriptive of the performer, but is descriptive of what happens, and which is characterized by an absence of intention. It is at the point of spontaneity that the performer is most apt to have recourse to his memory. He is not apt to make a discovery spontaneously. I want to find a way of discovering something you don't know at the time that you improvise. That is to say, the same time you're doing something that is not written down or decided upon ahead of time. Happily, Shoemaker took Cage's cue, asking whether he'd developed any satisfactory methods using improvisation. Cage gave this lengthy, thoughtful reply. "Finding, as with the conch shells and inlets, an instrument over which I have no control, or less control than usual. Another example is if you use a percussion instrument, a music stand which has a faulty relation between the part that holds the music and the three legs that support the stand. If I hold the three legs in my hand, the stand is upside down, and move the top part on a wooden floor, then because of the faulty relationship, I won't always get a frictional sound, but sometimes I will. It's a little like driving a bumper car in the funhouse, where you have less control than usual over which direction the vehicle takes. That interests me. But say you have control, then it is a matter of how to occupy your intentions in such a way that you move into areas with which you're unfamiliar, rather than areas based on memory and taste. One of the ways I've found, I call structural improvisation. Given a period of time, I will divide it. Say we have 8 minutes. We'll divide it into sections of either 1, 2, 3, or 4 minutes long, or 3 parts, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 1 minute, in any order, or whatever. Then if I have 10 sounds, I can find out through the use of chance operations which of those 10 sounds go in the first section, which go in the second section, and which go in the third. Then I improvise using the number of sounds that have been determined for the first section, the number of sounds for the second, and the number of sounds for the third, and I will have an improvisation which is characterized by a change of sound at those different times, no matter what I play. Two excellent examples of Cage's structural improvisation can be seen in compositions dating from 1992, the last year of his life. His 4-6, scored for 4 players producing sounds in any way over the work's 30 minutes, which was premiered by an ensemble comprising Joan LaBarbera, Willie Winant, Leonard Stein, and Cage himself on July 23, 1992, at Central Park's Summer Stage in New York City. In this piece, each performer chooses 12 different sounds, unspecified beyond having fixed characteristics, amplitude, overtone structure, etc., and then performs these sounds as specified in the score within flexible time brackets. Because each performer performs his or her chosen sounds within a context of others doing the indeterminate same, the result is a unique and unforeseeable morphology of continuity, one that can't help but change from any one performance to the next. His 112, also from 1992, for solo lecturer, first performed by him at the Palazzo dei Priori Sala dei Notari in Perugia, Italy on June 22, 1992, is another case in point. Here, Cage provides instructions for the creation of a unique chance-determined score comprising a series of 640 numbers between 1 and 12. The numbers 2 through 11, when they appear, are to be interpreted as whispered, vocalized vowels or consonants of each of those numbers. The number 1, when it appears, represents an empty word, a connective, a pronoun, a conjunctive or article, which is articulated. The number 12, a full word, a noun, a verb, adjective or adverb, also articulated. The performer follows the fixed sequence of numbers from beginning to end, but since the choice of words for the numbers 1 and 12 is entirely free, this work can only be understood fully as an improvisation. It should be noted that by the end of the 1989 Composer to Composer Festival, Cage had come to peace with Anthony Davis's position. In part, his acceptance had something to do with his devotion to the essential practices of Zen, wherein acceptance is key. But it may also have had something to do with his nearly lifelong role as permission giver, since freedom granted cannot be conditional. When asked in the Q&A portion of his public conversation with Conlon Nancarrow on the last day of the conference whether he might speak to how his views on improvisation had changed, Cage replied as follows. I would still criticize improvisation as I used to criticize it, but now I think we can imagine an improvisation which is different from just doing what you want, and much more like improvisation as Anthony Davis seems to think it or do it. That is to say, he thinks of improvisation as giving the improvisers a problem to solve. And that's how I find it acceptable too. That is, you can give people freedom in a situation that they see as a problem. Then the solutions can be invigorating. But if improvisation is not seen as a problem, then you just get repetition of mannerisms, or you get more of what you already know that you like. And what we want is to extend our enjoyment of life, or extend our enjoyment of music, or relationship of sounds. We want to live, don't we, in a more Mozartian situation, or as Mozartian as we can get. 1 week after participating in the Composer to Composer Festival, Cage appeared at Sound Design, an invitational conference on the uses of sound for radio drama, film, video, theater, and music, sponsored by Bay Area Radio Drama and held at Sprocket Systems Skywalker Ranch in Nicasio, California. Cage was slated to perform something from his 1982 radio play, James Joyce, Marcel Duchamp, Eric Satie, and Alphabet. But on the day his presentation was to occur, Thursday, August 31st at 11:30 a.m., he had changed his mind. What he chose to do instead is what will be heard here next week on All Things Cage, an impromptu, improvised presentation entitled How to Get Started, wherein he extemporized in random order on 10 topics of interest, each for a maximum duration of 3 minutes. Each of these extemporizations was captured on tape and then played back sequentially in ever-increasing density, superimposed on top of each new live improvisation. The piece thus grows in complexity from start to finish, so that at the end, the audience hears all 10 topics simultaneously. Penultimately, the 9 previously recorded and 1, the 10th and last, live, and in the end, all 10 on tape. Cage's 10 topics run a gamut between nearly lifelong interests on the one hand, silence, harmony, time, and on the other, emerging ideas about new compositions. Experience garnered at the Composer to Composer Festival are brought to bear on some, while others emphasize specific extant compositions thought about in the present tense. And more than 24 individuals who are variously relevant to his thinking are sprinkled throughout. Cage's presentation was fully expressive of an adage by which he lived. If you find yourself in a situation in which you feel dissatisfied, the appropriate thing to do is not to criticize, which is the purview of the critic, but to identify what it is you think you don't like, and then make something new in a kind of constructive response, which is, of course, the purview of the artist. But it was also emblematic of Cage's lifelong devotion to that which is truly experimental, since at the seasoned age of 76, just 3 years shy of his death, he continued to question his actions and choices, to listen to others, and to create new constructive responses, and to strive always to take himself and those around him into surprising, unknown places and experiences. Tune in next week's program on All Things Cage for Cage's realization of how to get started, Saturday, July 31, 7 to 8 p.m., here on WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. Now on to a lengthy excerpt of Jesse Stiles performing John Cage's Improvisation 4. This work was originally used as music for the choreographed piece by Merce Cunningham entitled Fielding Sixes, with stage decor and costume designed by Monica Fulleman. In it, there are 3 sets of 12 identical cassettes at play. all containing traditional Irish music played by Matt Molloy on flute and Paddy Glacken on fiddle. If performed as a work independent of the Cunningham Dance, the performers agree on an overall time length. During the performance, one change of playback speed is allowed. Improvisation 4 is realized here by Jesse Stiles, who beginning in 2010 served as the music supervisor for the Merce Cunningham Dance Company. Working with the company during their precedent-setting legacy tour, he produced and performed in more than 200 concerts featuring compositions by groundbreaking composers including John Cage, David Tudor, Brian Eno, Radiohead, Sigur Rós, and John Paul Jones. Stiles' own compositions were featured in many of the company's site-specific events. He is currently a professor in the School of Music at Carnegie Mellon University, where he leads courses on emerging music technologies. This excerpt runs about 28 minutes, so don't be fooled by particularly long silences. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.